A polar bear did him in. The biggest damned polar bear anyone had ever seen in or around Prudhoe Bay in the last 25 years, or so it was reported. Arrogance got him killed, though. And if William Emmett Harrington hadn't been such a narcissist, he might still be alive. But he was a narcissist, and he was also a braggart. The only topic of conversation William was interested in was William, and since he hadn't accomplished much of anything significant in his 28 years on Earth, he was painfully boring. William lived off his inheritance, a hefty trust fund set up by his grandfather, Henry Emmett Harrington, who must have had an inkling of the lazy-ass gene he was passing down, because his son, Morris Emmett Harrington, didn't work a day in his life, and William happily followed in his father's footsteps. Like all the Harrington men before him, William was a handsome devil and knew it. He didn't have any trouble getting women into his bed, but he could never lure any of them back for a repeat performance. No wonder. William treated sex like a race he had to win in order to prove that he was the best, and because he really was a narcissist, he didn't care about satisfying his partner. What he wanted was all that mattered. His past conquests had come up with various nicknames for him. Pig was one, Quick Trip was another, but the one that was uttered most behind his back was the Minute Man. All the women who had gone to bed with him knew exactly what that meant. Besides self-gratification, William's other passion was running. He'd made it a full-time job because, as with sex, he was shockingly fast. In the past year, he had accumulated 24 first-place prizes within a 6-state area, and he was about to enter a 5K race in his hometown of Chicago to collect his 25th. Since he believed crossing the finish line first was going to be a momentous event that everyone in Chicago would want to read about, he called the Chicago Tribune and suggested they do a feature article about him in the Sunday paper. Harrington also mentioned, more than once, how photogenic he was and how a full-color photo of him would enhance the article. One of the local news editors at the Tribune took the call and patiently listened to William's pitch, then bounced him to one of the entertainment editors, who quickly bounced him to one of the sports columnists, who bounced him to one of the health and fitness editors, who wrote an entire article on the top 5 allergens plaguing Chicago while he listened to the spiel. None of them was impressed or interested. The last editor to speak to William suggested that he give him a call back when he had 99 wins under his belt and was going for 100. William wasn't discouraged. He immediately called the Chicago Sun-Times and explained his idea for a story. He was rejected yet again. William realized he was going to have to lower his expectations if he wanted to see his name in print, and so he contacted the Illinois Chronicle, a small but popular neighborhood newspaper that focused primarily on local issues and entertainment. The editor-in-chief, Herman Anthony Bitterman, was an antacid-popping, seasoned veteran of the press with a pronounced Brooklyn accent. For 30 years, he had been on the foreign desk of the New York Times and had garnered several prestigious honors, including the RFK Journalism Award and the Polk Award. But when his good-for-nothing son-in-law ran off with another woman, his daughter's yoga instructor, for the love of God, Herman retired from the Times and moved with his wife, Marissa, to Chicago, where she had grown up, and where their daughter now lived with her 4 little girls. A newsman at heart, Herman couldn't stay retired long. When the opportunity presented itself, he took the job at the Chronicle as a distraction from boredom and an escape from the horde of meddling in-laws. He liked Chicago. He'd gone to Northwestern University, where he'd met Marissa. After graduation, they had returned to his hometown, New York, so he could take a job at the Times. Coming back to Chicago after decades in New York was a real adjustment. He had lived in a cramped 2-bedroom Manhattan apartment for so long that a 2-story brownstone took some getting used to. His only real complaint was the lack of noise. He missed falling asleep to the soothing sounds of cars screeching, horns blaring, and sirens shrieking. With so much quiet, even at the office, Herman found it difficult to get any work done. To compensate, He brought in an old television set from home, plopped it on top of his mini refrigerator, and left it on all day with the volume turned up. When the call came in from William Harrington, Herman hit the mute button before picking up the phone. While he ate his lunch, an Italian sausage and green pepper sandwich drenched in ketchup and washed down with an icy cold Kelly's root beer, he listened to Harrington pitch his story idea. It took Bitterman all of half a minute to sum up William Harrington. The man was an egomaniac.
Red, huh? You always wear red socks and a red t-shirt for every race. And white shorts. Yeah, that's interesting. Even when you run in the winter, still wear the shorts?
His question encouraged Harrington to ramble more, allowing Bitterman time to finish his sandwich. He took a long swig of his root beer, then interrupted Harrington's grandiose opinion of himself and said,
"Yeah, sure, we'll do the story. Why not?"
After scribbling down the particulars, Bitterman disconnected the call, then wadded up his brown lunch sack and tossed it into the trash can. He crossed the office to get to the door, no small feat, considering nearly every inch of the room was filled with crates of Kelly's old-fashioned root beer, stacked halfway to the ceiling. Since his door wasn't blocked, his office hadn't been deemed a fire hazard, at least not yet. He was hoarding what was left of Kelly's root beer because, in his estimation, it was the best damned root beer he had ever tasted, and when he'd heard the company had been forced to close its doors and was going out of business, he had done what any root beer addict would do and rushed out to buy as many bottles of the stuff as he could get his hands on.